Hello, I'm Bill Sisson, Executive Director of WBCSD North America, and welcome back to another edition of Transformative Leadership in Business. I'm joined today by Michael Maslansky, the CEO of Maslansky & Partners. Thanks for joining me today, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
We're going to have a really interesting conversation today, I'm sure. We're going to delve into this subject of linguistics, particularly in the narratives of business, where it's essential that we understand how the language we use becomes paramount in what people hear versus what is being said. This is what, Michael, I believe your firm calls language strategy.
That's correct.
And more in the crosshairs of our discussion today is this challenge that most companies are facing, which is we're transitioning in a world where environmental performance has moved from voluntary disclosure to regulated and in an increasing number of markets around the world. And how that information gets presented and consumed is the skill set of many folks inside of companies, the sustainability professionals, increasingly the financial teams, and of course, communications and marketing professionals in those companies. We know all too well that these issues are polarized and polarizing. And increasingly, this challenge that more disclosure is going to be picked up by broader audiences that are paying attention to the words that companies are using. And at issue is this language of environmental performance that we're using today. So, Michael, small topic. You're referred to as a communications and language strategies expert and have written a book titled The Language of Trust: Selling Ideas in a World of Skeptics. That all seems really relevant to me today. And tell me a little bit about yourself and what led you to pursue this interesting line of expertise.
I wish I could say it was all part of a grand plan, but I think as life often happens, it was not. But I did start my career on Ross Perot's presidential campaign. So I started out in the political world doing polling work to try and understand the zeitgeist, what voters were thinking and feeling. Ross Perot unfortunately left the race kind of early in 1992. And I continued on to work with my boss at the time in his, at that point, fledgling political consulting firm. From there, I took a couple of detours. I was a lawyer, went to law school and became an attorney for a couple of years. At the height of the dot-com boom, ran an internet company, and then found my way back to my original boss in what became this firm. And really, the focus of the firm had shifted from pure polling to looking at different issues that the country faced, and thinking about how the way that the issue was presented and messaged, the proof points that were used, the approach that was taken, how it could influence the way the public and even other stakeholders interpreted the issue. And you could build support for it. You could build opposition for an issue very much based on how that issue was framed. And so for the last 20 plus years, I've been focused on refining that in less in the political world now, more in the corporate space and on particular issues.
I got to imagine 20, 30 years ago, the media and the medium that was being used around how communications was happening was fundamentally different than what we have today, which is the viral effect, if you will. Mm-hmm. So really interesting background, and thanks for that. And now sort of fast forward, you've launched Maslansky & Partners a few years back. What do you see as its mission? What void do you find yourself filling in this probably pretty occupied space of corporate communications?
There are a couple of things that we often say to respond to that question. The first is that as humans, every time we open our mouths, we're making a choice between around what words we want to use, how we want to approach a communication. We change that approach depending on who we're talking to, what it is that we're trying to achieve with our messaging. And our job really as a language strategy firm is to help our clients choose wisely. And that ties to another saying that we have, which is actually our tagline and runs through everything that we do, which is that it's not what you say that matters, it's what your audience hears. And that when we work with clients, if you work for a company or an organization, you kind of live, eat, and breathe that organization all day long. You speak its language, you believe its mythology, and you subscribe to kind of all these attitudes that people inside the business have. And then you're trying to communicate with people who come from a very different place and perspective. And so our mission is really trying to help our clients understand that they are not the audience. And that if they're trying to be successful with their communication, they have to better understand their audience, understand how that audience is likely to interpret a message, and then find exactly the right kind of words, framing, phrases to effectively communicate their message.
So true. I lived inside of a major Fortune 50 corporation for 33 years. And if there's one thing we spoke, it was our own language. And trying to adapt that language to an external audience wasn't always easy. Even my own family didn't understand what I was saying sometimes. So, but no, totally get it. And we do get kind of scope locked in some of the way we want to say things. And maybe that's a nice entry point into this Crosshairs context that I mentioned earlier, this way we find companies communicating around environmental, social, and governance issues. And I know your firm has been looking at this more recently. And perhaps I'll start with the first question. Why did you start looking at this topic?
Yeah, well, so I think, and you alluded to this earlier, that the world that we're operating in today has become more polarized. And even if it's not more polarized, I think there is more opportunity for polarization than ever before, meaning that the right is looking at what the left is saying and trying to turn it into a controversy. And the left is looking at what the right is saying and trying to turn it into a controversy. And all that is really focused on, in many ways, the language that is being used by one side or the other. And so one of the things that we saw evolving over time is that if you go back 10 years, 5 years even, although it's getting close to the 5-year mark, all of the momentum on environmental and social issues was moving to the left. It was coming from the progressive left, pushing companies to move further and faster and do so fairly aggressively. And actually, the right had not found any basis on which to challenge that momentum. But what happened really now 2-3 years ago, I guess, is that all of a sudden the right found a voice in pushing back. It started in Florida, probably started elsewhere too, but with the critical race theory issue in Florida, and really exploded to be a frontal challenge on everything that the ESG movement had been promoting. And we saw that emerging and wanted to see what was happening, why was it happening, what was really at the heart of it, and for companies that wanted to continue to move down the path that they were on, what could we do to support those efforts from our perspective as kind of researchers and communicators?
It is bringing you back to your roots, I suppose, with the political way in which these issues have become politicized. I always like to tell folks that are either right or left or in somewhere in the middle, that sometimes surprises them, that it was the Richard Nixon administration that actually launched the Environmental Protection Agency. How do these issues get intermingled in such a way is really important for us to understand. And I'm really happy your company is trying to help us get at the root of how we need to better communicate what we think is going on here. So maybe that's a good way of saying, what have you discovered? What are you learning? What are you picking up through the opinion, the market research you're doing? How is that being executed? There's a lot going on in this question. I've seen some of your work already, and I've come to really appreciate the depth of it. But now it's time for hopefully our broader listener base. Give us now an intro.
At this point, we've done about 7 or 8 different studies of 15 to 20,000 consumers, voters, investors in the US and then in a handful of countries globally, and been building this base of insights over time. At the highest level, there are a couple things that really stand out in pretty glaring ways. The first is that arguably the biggest problem with ESG is how it's been framed, that ESG as an acronym is one that we may all know exactly what it means. Most people don't. It is an acronym without any meaning. People can't define it. And it's very easy to demonize something that has no kind of implicit meaning in and of itself. So if you say radical ESG, people are likely to think that it's something negative because the words of the acronym itself has no ability to defend itself. And so in this space, as we often see in highly specialized spaces, when you come up with a language that is not immediately understandable, you use a lot of acronyms, you actually end up alienating people who are not central to the people that you're talking to. The second thing is that a lot of the messaging around, particularly on environment and on social issues, it's kind of had this morality embedded in it. It is basically saying that the people who agree with us are on the side of the right, and the inference that many on the right, many conservatives have drawn, is that they are wrong. They are doing something bad or evil if they are not aligned with an agenda that has climate and social issues at its core. And so you end up with this morality that actually alienates a lot of people on the right, particularly in the US. And so you've got bad framing, you've got this forced morality. The interesting thing is most people actually really like the elements of climate and even of many social issues. Like they want companies to take care of the environment and not pollute. They want companies to take care of their employees. And so the big thing that we found is that the worst thing about ESG is the language. If you take the substance of it and you communicate it in a different way, then you can build a lot more support for the core elements of taking action on climate and even on many social issues.
I've been giving this a lot of thought since we first started talking with you. And for me, it's making people feel it more personally. It's more about how the narrative, the language that you use with me embeds in me personally. Mm-hmm. And how it affects me personally. And I think that's where the reference to jargon and the morality issues that intertwine, yeah, for me, really make a difference in how we need to think differently about where we go from here.
And I'll say one other thing, Bill. Some messages make you feel good as a communicator, and some messages work, and they're usually not the same thing. And in this case, it's really true. You've got people who have dedicated their lives to sustainability, to DEI, and the messages that they're using make them feel really good. But they're talking to people who have not been indoctrinated into the same belief system, who don't speak the same language, and it ends up doing a lot of damage. And so we're really trying to move these groups of people to say, speak the language of your audience, not the language of your peers.
These issues have been around for many, many years, and I think people are really starting to take one side of view or the other, and we've got to figure out, these issues are so vital to get right. We've got to figure out how to bring those sides together. And I think this is really that moment. Another thing that I found interesting, Michael, is over the last 5 years, capital markets have really gotten involved in this ESG concept. And in fact, the term ESG is actually a capital markets term because they understand that frame of reference probably more so than Main Street, in that they're really trying to quantify business risk on financial performance. And so ESG to them is a thing that they use. But having said that, what are you hearing from investors on all this? Because they're impacted by this as well. I mean, they're under attack from both sides as well. So what are they saying?
What we've seen over the last 5-10 years is, you know, we saw impact investing and sustainable investing become ESG investing. And there was a lot of the same momentum that we saw in corporate boardrooms. There were a lot of net inflows into the world of ESG investing. And then all of a sudden there was this backlash, or as a result of the backlash, there was a pullback in ESG investing outflows. And the question was, is it over? Is ESG investing over? At the same time, in a lot of the financial services work that we've done over time in the past, there had been this question about like a trade-off between an ESG investment. Are you trading off performance in order to do good? And that was a pretty widely held belief. Well, there are a couple of things that I think we're seeing that have happened after the pullback. Now, as we ask people whether or not they would and will and are investing in organizations or in sustainable investments that have a climate focus in particular, I think what we see overwhelmingly, at least among affluent retail investors who were the core of our most recent investor study, is that there is a very clear belief that the future is clean, that clean energy is a good place to invest in a macro sense. It's a good sector to invest. In fact, when we ask people about their perspectives on both 1- and 10-year performance of clean energy technologies as one sector, sustainable investments as another, AI as a third, and then a series of other, pharmaceuticals as a fourth, and a series of other investment sectors, clean energy outperformed every sector in their minds, or will outperform every sector in their minds other than AI, both in the 1 year and 10 year period. So there's a pretty strong belief that the future is clean. The other part about it is that there is also an increasing recognition that climate risk is real business risk, and that the idea that companies are going to operate without looking at their climate risk, or that investors are going to operate without evaluating the climate risk of a company, is becoming an anachronism. It can't be true that companies and investors will avoid looking at that in the future.
In this time frame that we all have witnessed the huge impact of supply chain disruptions that were initiated by a global pandemic. In some ways, a test drive for what comes ahead in terms of climate impact, supply chain disruption, companies having to rethink their execution in their value chains. These are huge issues. And for me, everything you said is absolutely fundamentally correct, that clean energy is one of those investable assets that is going to be fundamentally needed to help companies manage and navigate some of these risks. And who knows, maybe AI and clean energy can somehow come together. Perhaps that's the way we're going to get out of this mess. Interestingly enough, there's also another element. You know, we've just come out of a very interesting election cycle. What we've experienced here in the U.S., frankly, is no different than many of the elections taking place around the world. This was referred to as a super election year. In other words, many democracies around the world were going through an election cycle this particular year. I heard an interesting statistic the other day. I'm not sure I can quote the source, but it was the majority of elections saw the incumbents lose, which to me was a signal that people want change. There's an underpinning of a need for something different. And so here we are. We're about to introduce a new administration, or I should say a returning administration. And you actually worked with us a little bit on doing some advanced research on what people expect, what Main Street expects from whatever administration came to be coming out of this election. So perhaps say a few words about what does the market expect from this incoming administration?
First, I'll say the world that we're operating in now is, I think we're in a fairly permanent state of frustration with government, and therefore every election is a change election because governments are forced to promise more than they tend to be able to deliver. They campaign to a different segment of the market than they actually govern to, and so they create a lot of dissatisfaction. So that being said, in the lead up to the election, we went out and we wanted to understand what it is that people expected of the different candidates. And we did it right before the election because we wanted to get a sense of how those expectations might differ depending on who was elected. What I'll start with first is what will not change or what would not change depending on who got elected. And the first aspect of it is really that there is a belief that the future is clean. That does not change, regardless of who was going to get elected. The fact that now President Trump has been reelected, but even if Vice President Harris had been elected, there was an expectation that companies would continue to take climate action to become cleaner, to pollute less, or to reduce their carbon pollution, and that wasn't going to change. What was interesting is that we also asked, a lot of this focused on what is not so much straight consumer expectations, but consumers' expectations of companies under each administration. And so what we found is that under a Trump administration, there was actually going to be an expectation that companies would actually do more than under a Harris administration. That perhaps because there was an expectation of what the Trump administration might do on climate legislation that's out there, that it was going to depend on companies to step up more, to take climate actions themselves, to even communicate more broadly about where they stand on climate change, and even a little bit to advocate for more climate action. So the expectations are high for either candidate. They were higher in the event of a Trump presidency. But then we look at what consumers think companies will do under a Trump administration versus a Harris administration. And I think this is probably the most interesting data from the survey, is that think that companies should do more with a President Trump, they expect companies will do less. And so when we ask them, do you think that companies will invest in programs that reduce carbon pollution or publicize the actions that you've taken, communicate about your positions, or even advocate? On every measure, there was a dramatic drop in the ratio of consumers who first said that companies should take these actions to the percentage of the ratio of consumers who expected that companies will take these actions now that President Trump is elected. And that, I think, creates a real danger for companies, because where companies, just like candidates or politicians, get into trouble is where they fail to meet expectation. And so if the expectation is that companies now have a greater responsibility, but they do less than that expectation of what their consumers think that they should, they are likely to create mistrust or distrust with their consumers.
Which for me brings us right back to the main challenge or opportunity, depending on how you want to say it. Companies are having to get their arms around real risk, real material issues that aren't going to go away. If anything, they're going to get worse. And over time, the actions they're taking are going to have to be commensurate with their management of real business risk. People need to understand that that translates into risks for them, whether that's cost of goods, whether that's employment opportunity, whether that's investment opportunity, what have you. Companies are going to have to figure out, back to your point and the purpose that you've set yourself up to provide, how do we communicate more effectively and why we're taking these actions and taking on these issues to better our business performance.
So I talked earlier about the fact that so much of the messaging around ESG has been around this kind of morality. It's the right thing to do. We're going to fix the future. We're going to make a positive impact. And where the language needs to go is to the language of business. That in everything that we've tested, all the messages and narratives that we've tested, what we find is that the best place to be, and by that I mean the place that generates the least polarization, that is viewed positively by both the right and the left, is when we connect climate action to responsible business. If you say that we are acting as a responsible business and we are taking these actions because it's the responsible thing to do, then it does not feel like it is a political action. It feels like it is smart business. You're serving your stakeholders. And in the US and even more so around the world, overwhelmingly, voters, consumers, investors believe that companies have a responsibility beyond their shareholders. They believe that they have a responsibility to their customers, to their employees, to their communities, if only because if you don't take care of your customers, you're probably not going to have a great business for long, or your employees, or your communities. But so there is a responsibility. And so that becomes the filter or the lens through which you can communicate in a way that is much less political, much less polarizing, and much more effective, whether you're talking to a Biden administration or a Trump administration.
I'm almost certain you've tweaked some interest out there on this great work that you're taking on and some of the real important findings that you've captured. How can folks interested in learning more about what your research is telling you, where can they go to find out more?
You can come to maslansky.com, M-A-S-L-A-N-S-K-Y, in case you don't know, .com. There is a little microsite on there for responsible business. There are some downloadable reports on some of the work that we've done so far. And then you can contact us to do more. And I would just say that, you know, even before you do that, take a look at your communication through the lens of business. How much are you translating your messaging on climate into the language of business? Obviously, we're happy to help you there, but that is the first most important step.
Michael, thank you so much for this amazing, short, but informative and ideally impactful time today, and for being a transformational leader for business.
Appreciate that, Bill. Thanks very much for having me.